In our congregation, just the last few years, we've been blessed to have children come into our fellowship, come into our families. And I thought today was really a good time. We only have Father's Day once a year. And we have some young men in our congregation who haven't married yet, haven't found a family, haven't made a family yet. And I hope that some of the things that, that I'll say today from the Scriptures will help you. And will help our young couples and those who are about to get married and so forth. We have a Mother's Day. We all spend a lot of energy and effort trying to show and demonstrate to our mothers how much we appreciate them. And this lesson today, I'm not trying to denigrate the importance of anybody. Mothers, just kind of think today, I'm not preaching to you, I'm not speaking to you particularly, but you might say some amens occasionally, and that would be all right. Being a father is something in our society today is, if you just looked at the general scope of things, you would think it was kind of a joke. That fathers held a kind of a position of lone wolf. The one who has a whole different mindset about family than the mother does. And in our society, somehow, we have elevated men behaving badly. And we see it on television, we see it in the papers, we see it in the news, that being bad seems to be a good thing in our society. It is for men. Now the women, they're supposed to be a little more settled, and they're supposed to be a little more moral, and they're supposed to have a little bit different view of things. But the men are not really expected to be godly in our society, it seems today. Joshua, as you know, challenged his fellow Jews to choose you this day whom you will serve, whether it be the gods your fathers worshipped or the God of heaven and earth. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And as we know, many fathers today have chosen the wrong path, just as the Israelite fathers did back in that day. We know that it wasn't very long after Joshua said that and they all dispersed into their family and into their tribes that the fathers began to worship the idols of the people around them and began to do the things, pagan things, and led the families off into paganism. And they were not what they should have been. And time again in the Old Testament, we find men behaving badly. And I want to talk about men behaving godly. And that's what this lesson is about today. If I can figure out how to change the page here. Psalm 112. You know, there's a psalm where we always read about mothers and about women. Proverbs 31 talks about the beautiful woman. Psalm 112 elevates the man and talks about some of the characteristics of a godly man. Hallelujah. Happy is the man who fears the Lord, taking great delight in his commandments. His descendants will be powerful in the land. The generation of the upright will be blessed. Wealth and riches are in his house, and his righteousness endures forever. Light shines in the darkness for the upright. He is gracious, compassionate, and righteous. Good will come to a man who lends generously and conducts his business fairly. He will never be shaken. The righteous will be remembered forever. He will not fear bad news. His heart is confident. trusting in the Lord, his heart is assured. He will not fear. In the end, he will look in triumph on his foes. He distributes freely to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. His horn, reputation, will be exalted in honor. The wicked man will see it and be angry. He will gnash his teeth in despair. The desire of the wicked will come to nothing. In this psalm, there is promises made to men concerning his children, concerning his character, concerning his conduct, the way he is to live his life. The confidence that he has as a God-fearing man, a man of charity, and a man who is recommended to all who see him and who know him. And so today, I want us to think about the things that men can do to achieve godly stature in this world. We all know the psalm that says, "Blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord. And in his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he does shall prosper." I want to talk to you about four things today. It may not be four. I may not get that far, but I'll get as far as I can with it. But first, before I get into this, I want to say that I have been very impressed with our fathers here in this congregation. You have displayed a lot of things to me as I've watched you grow in your families that are very impressive. And so a lot of the things that I'm going to say today may not apply to you specifically, but maybe you can gain something that will help you as you mentor others. There are four specific challenges in being a godly father. First of all, you need to realize the power of your influence. Second, you need to avoid the pitfalls of masculinity. We're going to go into these a little bit deeper. Third, you need to arrange the priorities in your life. And fourth, you need to assume the place of your responsibilities. But I want to say that you can't wait, really, until you become a father to start working on some of these things. It's not like you live a certain kind of life up until marriage, and then all of a sudden, bang, you change over to some new creature, like, you know, turning a page or doing a 360, or not a 360, a 180, up to the rear march. I just found out last week we don't do to the rear march anymore. They've changed all that, but that's okay. So we need to, even the young men who aren't parents yet, who aren't even married yet, you need to start thinking about these characteristics. And know, it may be that as you develop these characteristics that you'll be more attractive to the kind of person that you'd like to marry. And this may be a bonus for you. You know, sometimes we act a certain way until that marriage time comes, and then the person expects us to keep on acting that way. That's the person they married, and we try to change into something else. It just doesn't work. They don't accept it because we're changed. So we need to work on these things when we're young, even before we marry. Challenge number one: acknowledge the power of your influence. You have a powerful influence on your wife. Now that could be positive or that can be negative. And we all know that we want to avoid the negative if possible. In Ephesians 5:22, it talks about the relationship of the man and the woman, the husband and the wife. And it is a beautiful picture, not of a man dominating a woman, even though it says that a woman should submit herself to the man, but it is a beautiful picture of a united family with a person of responsibility in charge to make that final decision. And so we need to realize that in order to be a good father, we have to realize our influence in our family. He is to have responsibility for the well-being of that family, not just physically, not just the money, but in a spiritual, or creating a spiritual atmosphere within that family. And to love his wife as Christ loved the church and was willing to give himself for her. That's not so much physical as it is, I am going to lead us into the best possible future. When you do your part, your wife will be happy and will be satisfied. Dr. Richard Halverson, former chaplain of the United States Senate, married for over 40 years, stated the following. I don't know whether I agree with this or not, but he says it, so it's something to think about. It is my deep, settled conviction that 100% of the responsibility of the marriage relationship belongs to the husband. The scriptures tell us that just as husbands, we need to model ourselves after Jesus Christ, who gave himself up in every way in order to present his bride to himself without spot, stain, blemish, or wrinkle. You know, we can't wait in our marriage to start doing that. This is something that we have to begin this way. So many marriages in the first few years are so busy in careers, chasing careers and trying to change ourselves into what we want to be, that the marriage is lost at the very beginning. So many divorces take place in those first few years, and the connection is not there. And even in our world where things are busy and we have things to do and places to go and our work is so important to us, fathers, we have to maintain, we have to place this relationship at the center of everything in our life. And those families would have a much better chance of being successful. You, father, potential fathers, you have an influence on the core of the family. And keeping the wife in the position and the place of happiness and satisfaction. Second, you have a powerful influence on your children. It has been proven that one of the greatest problems in our society today is a lack of influence of godly fathers. Now, there are many families that are single parent families that have done a wonderful job in raising their children without a father or without a mother even. As a matter of fact, Father's Day was started by a woman back in the 1910s. After Mother's Day came along, her mother died, and she and her six brothers and sisters were raised by a single dad. And she had so much respect for her father and saw the notoriety, I guess you'd say, of Mother's Day and the way that she was lifted up on that day. She wanted to do the same for her father because all the sacrifice that he had given to her. And so she started this Father's Day in the congregation where she went to church. She went to her preacher and said, Why don't we set aside a day to celebrate the fathers? Because we have many great fathers who have led children in the right direction. And the preacher said, well, I can't do it this week. I've already got my sermon picked out. But the third Sunday of June, that was the next Sunday after that Sunday, I'll have a sermon up and we'll do it. So they started it in the little congregation in Washington State. And it eventually became world or United States and even other countries in the world began to celebrate it as well. And unfortunately, the legislatures in Washington didn't think it was very important, so it took them until 1972 to make it an official day for men. So we finally got our day, men, in 1972. But look at the statistics of fatherless in our society. Fatherless daughters are 53% more likely to marry as teenagers, 111%. Well, y'all can read all this. It's been up here, and you've probably been reading it anyway, so I'm not going to go through all the statistics. But the point is that fatherless daughters and fatherless sons have problems in this world generally. Not that they can't be raised properly by a single parent, but it is much more difficult for them in this world. Fathers have a great influence, thank you, in their family, in their home, with their mother, with their wives, and their children. But you know what? The statistics that you just read are just about as significant among two-parent families whose father is disengaged, who is not a spiritual leader in the home, who is always away, who's always somewhere else. He's not involved in spiritual things at all. When he is not the spiritual leader he should be. There's a line from the song, and I've heard of it, and I found it on the internet the other day, or last night, really. Call the leader of the band. Somebody told me about it before. I think Matt may have mentioned it to me when it came out 2 or 3 years ago. When did it come out? 60s. There's a line in there. It says, and it says, he's talking about his father. And he said, his gentle means of sculpting souls took me years to understand. He was a musician, his father. And I just love the way he worded this. As he taught his children, he looked at it as if he were sculpting souls. His blood runs through my instrument, and his song is in my song. My life has been a poor attempt to imitate the man. I'm just a living legacy to the leader of the band. Fathers, and again, I'm not denigrating the mother's roles here today, but you are a sculptor of souls. As you raise your children up, not just when they're little, not just when they're easy to deal with, and you don't think it's easy right now, but it does get tougher when they get a mind of their own and you can't beat them into submission. You are sculpting them. There's a educational institution that said, you give us your children for the first 6 years of their life and we'll have them forever. It's those first years of their life that's so important in sculpting who they become. Not that you want them to be what you want them to be necessarily, but or like you, but you want to shape them into what it is that they are best suited for in this world. You are an infuser of character, the lighter of the fire in their heart that will stay with them throughout their life. Give them their drive. Listen to these scriptures. Children are a heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is His reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are the children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies at the gate. He that spares the rod hates the son, but he that loves him chastens him. And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. There's some examples in the Old Testament where the father is definitely a driver of the way their children turned out. And the Lord was with Jehoshaphat because he walked in the ways of his father David and sought not unto Balaam. And he did that which was right. He's talking about Uzziah. According to all that his father Amaziah did. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord and walked in the ways of his father. And we see that time after time in the Old Testament where fathers were followed in the footsteps of their parents. We've seen that time and time again where children will even hate their fathers because of the way they are. And yet when they get older, their life begins to run in the same direction, even though they did not really like it. The influence of the parent, of the father, was so strong in their life that they went that way anyway. Fathers, you must be aware of your awesome influence in your family. You are given a great responsibility to demonstrate Christ to your family. You are the foundation and the spiritual catapult into the next generation. Challenge number two. I started not to get into this one, but because this one hurts me. Avoid the pitfalls of your masculinity. Guys, we have to admit some things about ourselves. Now, this is just general. Some of you may not be like this. We must admit it. We're kind of arrogant in our look at life. We're kind of self-contained. And we think maybe that if I got a toothache, it will heal itself. And we don't need to go to the dentist. The tooth will eventually fall out and everything will be okay. I don't know who would do such a stupid thing as that, but there you go. We just think we can heal ourselves. We have this John Wayne, Rambo, Chuck Norris mentality that we can do it. We can do it. We can do it ourselves. And we don't need any help from anybody else. We don't need advice from anybody else particularly. We'll just take care of it. Is that true or not? Am I off base here? Or am I just talking about myself? We must overcome this as a father. We have to share ourselves with other people. One of the hardest things for me when I first started parenting, actually I'd already faced it when I was a teacher, was to tell my students, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. That's one of the hardest things I ever did. I still remember it in the classroom because I did a stupid thing. I thought I was right. I thought I knew all the situation. I told a boy to go home and cry on his mother's shoulder. I was really mean back then. He stepped out of line in marching practice one day. And I mean, I just come to find out he didn't have a mother. His mother was dead and had just died not very long ago. It was tough. I was wrong. I learned a lesson from it, but even under that circumstance, it was hard for me to go to that person and apologize. It was hard for me to say I'm wrong. And a lot of times, I don't know, maybe I'm just by myself on this, but that was a hard life lesson for me. The more you do it, the more mistakes you make, which I made and continue to, a million, the more we realize that we made a mistake and we ask people to forgive us for it and we try to learn from it, the better it will be. Pride goes before a fall. And we often have a tendency to jump into a situation before we have all the facts. We feel that we have lost our masculinity if we give in. If I say I'm sorry, it's a sign of weakness. And I want to be strong. I want to be correct. I want to be out front. I have to say, I'm sorry. Oh, sorry. Where am I? Oh, how do you go back? Is that it? Challenge number two, autocratic nature. This means that we tend to want to be the boss of everything. Is that a natural tendency of men? Of guys? I don't know. It is for me. We decide things before we evaluate everyone's and the situation. It's my way or the highway. I remember the closest thing I came to divorce. Our family was on a Western trip. And we went, y'all know where I went. It went out the Western Yellowstone, the Western Gate. Went over to Idaho Falls. I think that's the name of the place. Idaho Falls. Well, we were just traveling through, but I wanted to see Idaho Falls. I wanted to see the falls. Jonathan and Davey, I think they thought they were already going to have to hitchhike back to Tennessee after this little event. And so I said, are we going to find Idaho Falls before this trip's over, before we get out of this town? So I start driving, and Peggy says, there's a sign right there that's pointing that way to Idaho Falls. I said, nah, I know it's not there. So I drove around the town about four times, and finally we came back to the sign again, and I didn't want to give in, but I did. By this time, it was close to divorce. That's why I turned. And sure enough, there was Idaho Falls right there, two blocks down the street. And I think they probably still remember that occasion. I was right. And anybody going to tell me that I was wrong, I'm the boss, I'm driving, and I'm right. That's the way we are, I think, guys. At least I am. And so we have to understand that that is our nature. And that we have to fight that nature. We have to listen. We have to learn to be more open. There's a scripture, again, in Ephesians chapter 5, where God talks about the relationship. And he says, the husband is the head of the wife. Well, some men take that as an autocratic demand. We have to come in and hit the gavel every time we walk in. We need our TV remote, and we need our chair ready to go, and a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or whatever it is. And we have to be served by that wife. But that's not what that means, and that's not the kind of relationship we're to have. We are not to be authoritarian in our relationships in the family, even our children. The father is to look at the needs of the children and put them first. Not to be the boss, but to be the director, to be the leader of that direction. Challenge number two, the third thing, is absenteeism. I hate to say it, but men have a natural tendency to avoid responsibility. She did it. I didn't do it. He did it. I didn't do it. It's their fault. It's pointing fingers. So sometimes we just avoid being the responsible party. We don't want to take the responsibility. We want it to be somebody else's responsibility. What are we going to eat today? I don't know. You decide. So you decide you're going to go up here to, you know, Las Maracas or whatever it is, and the food's terrible and the service is awful and the air conditioner doesn't work. Well, you're the one that told us to come in here. You know, we want to put the responsibility off on somebody else. That's our natural tendency. But the worst thing we can be as a father is AWOL, absent from responsibility, from our family obligations. This doesn't mean that we literally walk out necessarily, but that we abandon our role as a godly father. We must consciously commit ourselves to lead our family. There's nothing more important in this world than our children. And nothing in this world is more important to your children than two godly parents. Here's a list of things. I'm not going to read all of them because I do want to get to the next section before I quit. I'm not going to finish the lesson, but you see the things here. I want to mention one here, number two here. It says, take them on walks and excursions, but don't leave them in the parking lot in another town. That may sound strange to you, but I did that. I took our band to a parade in another town, and the kids weren't in the band, but they had to go with us. And so I was driving the bus, and so we got to the parade. We left them at a playground while the parade was going on, and then we all got back on the bus and left. And about halfway back to town, back to our where the school was, one of my students said, "Mr. Sin, where's your kids?" I said, "Whoops." So I had to turn around and go back and hope nobody had kidnapped them. In these days, I probably would have been put in jail for about 10 years for it. But anyway, we found them there safe and sound and scared. And I said, this is one of the first packs I think we made. I don't think they kept it, but do not ever tell your mother. It's ice cream for life. They used that too. They were old enough to know how to use that bribery, that blackmail on me. But be in their life. Share their life. It's not as hard to do when they're young. But as they grow older and get more and more involved in things, and you get more and more involved in your work and in the things that the other things that are in your life, sometimes you forget how important your involvement in those lives are. In short, be a full-time dad, not a part-time one. Many years ago, a man named Harry Chapin, I think that's right, wrote a song inspired by the birth of his first child. This song became the number one song on the hit parade just a couple of years ago, 1969 or something, I don't know. Matt actually was the one that was telling me about this song. And I started to read it to you, but I thought it's such a great message in the song that I'd get David to play it, and then I'll close up after this. The name of the song is "The Cat's in the Cradle." Maybe some of you've heard it before. It's kind of an anthem for men, fathers in particular, and it describes the possibility of doing it wrong, and how he realized it too late.
My child arrived just the other day, He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad, come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today, I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay, and he walked away, but his smile never dimmed and said, I'm gonna be like him, yeah, you know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know. Well, he came from college just the other day. So much like a man, I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you. Can you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later, can I have them, please? And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when. I've long since retired, my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I can find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids have the flu. But it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me, he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. We're gonna have a good time there.
Well, I'm going to just close this today and preach the rest of it next Father's Day. I want to tell you, mothers, potential mothers, wives, elevate your husband. Tell him how important it is for him to be there and to be a part of your life, to be a part of your children's lives. Elevate him. Support him. Husbands, love your wives. Treat them like the queen. My daddy said, yes, son, I'm the head of this house, but your mother is the neck. And so I've always remembered that they worked together and they knew what it was to be godly parents, and how much it meant to us, how much it meant to our family to have godly parents. Some of you weren't raised in a family like that, but it's hopefully something that you want to do with your life and the kind of husband, father you want to be is a godly father, a godly man, a man of character, a man that brings stability to the home, no matter what's going on. Read Psalm 112 every once in a while and see the kind of man, the kind of things that being a godly father will bring to you. Confidence. Not fearful about what's going to happen because you've got God on your side. We're going to sing this song here, 448, I think. And you know, whenever I preach or sometime when I lead singing, I like to clump. So if it's okay, can we have Family Matters first and then sing this 448 after that, and we'll have to all come up for the clump. Thank you for listening. And I do encourage all of you to realize the importance of godly fathers in our world and in our families. If any of you have a